This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Swuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight:
Angolans cast ballots Wednesday in the first election in decades that doesn't include longtime President José Eduardo dos Santos. The ruling party is widely projected to maintain power, but some voters have made clear that they are casting ballots for change.
That's VOA's Anita Powell reporting from Luanda. Details next.
Also, there's more concern today about the health of Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. And dozens of schools in Cameroon's two English-speaking regions burn as tensions in those areas grow.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story: Angolans cast ballots today in the first election in decades that doesn't include longtime President José Eduardo dos Santos. The ruling party is widely projected to maintain power, but some voters have made clear they are casting ballots for change. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Luanda.
On Wednesday, Angola's retiring president did something he hasn't done in decades. He voted for someone else. Just after 9 a.m. local time, President José Eduardo dos Santos shuffled slowly into a side entrance of Luanda's polling station 1047, a law school named after the nation's first president. Dos Santos took the reins after Agostinho Neto died in 1979. After dos Santos cast his ballot, he and his entourage slowly walked out. He did not speak to the press and ignored VOA's question about whom he voted for. But dos Santos previously made his choice clear. "I am here," he told this massive crowd during the final pre-election rally of the ruling People's Movement for the Liberation of Angola, "to support our candidate." And it's likely his chosen successor, Defense Minister João Lourenço, will prevail. The MPLA is predicted to win this legislative election. Its top candidate, Lourenço, would then become president. The next president will inherit a country dependent on oil and imports, and beset by high unemployment and inflation so dire that the black market exchange rate for dollars is double the official rate. Dos Santos has repeatedly been accused of flagrant corruption, and his children run several powerful state enterprises. Meanwhile, the majority of Angolans live in poverty, without basic services. Anger over this inequality propelled Angolans to action, including 42-year-old Esperanza Francisco Domingos. "Today is my first time voting because I was never interested in voting and I never knew the value of voting," she said. "And today I voted for change. I voted for change because everybody says that we have to vote for change. We have to vote for change. And let's see, as time goes by, if our lives change, because we don't see any change and we are suffering." Others, like 62-year-old Maria Boaventura, were more optimistic as they cast their ballot. "I think there are better prospects," she said, adding, "It seems that there will be more transparency." Voters say they're also seeking an end to the high levels of perceived corruption. 65-year-old Adolfo Makwanga condemned the dos Santos family's lavish lifestyle. His son bought a $5,000 watch in London, he said. "And those of us who fought for the country, what do we have? Nothing." The six political parties have discussed the economy at length, with Lourenço promising to diversify the economy and the leading opposition UNITA Party pledging to crack down on corruption and welcome foreign investment. For many Angolans, however, this election is also a novel opportunity to do what the president did: vote for someone new. "It is an ambitious election," said 55-year-old João Malungo, adding that he is honored to vote in his country. Officials have said results are expected the day after the election. Anita Powell, VOA News, Luanda, Angola.
K Kenyan election officials have submitted about 54,000 documents to the Supreme Court, saying the country will know the whole truth about the August 8th presidential election. Reuters reports the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission was responding to a legal challenge to the results by an opposition coalition. The court will hold a pre-trial hearing Saturday to lay out how the case will proceed. The court has until the end of the month to decide whether the elections were free and fair. The opposition wants the results overturned and for a new election to be held. If the court rejects their appeal, President Uhuru Kenyatta will be sworn in for another term on September 12th.
There's more concern today about the health of Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. AFP reports Buhari canceled today's weekly cabinet meeting. It would have been his first such meeting after returning to Nigeria Saturday. He spent more than 100 days in London for treatment of an undisclosed medical condition. Yesterday, it was announced that President Buhari would work from home because his office had been infested with rodents during his absence.
Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi and the country's foreign minister met today with top White House advisor Jared Kushner, who led a U.S. delegation to the country. The meeting came shortly after the U.S. delayed or canceled hundreds of millions of dollars in military and economic aid over human rights concerns. It was earlier reported that Egypt's foreign ministry had canceled its own meeting with the delegation to protest the U.S. move, but Foreign Minister Sameh Shoukry did sit in on the meeting with the president. Jared Kushner is President Trump's son-in-law and has been given the job of trying to revive Israeli-Palestinian peace talks. Egypt receives about $1.5 billion annually in military and economic aid from the U.S.
At least half a dozen schools in Cameroon's two English-speaking regions have been burned in the past week. It is the latest sign of deepening tensions as the strike in those regions enters its 10th month. Moki Edwin Kenzika reports from Yaoundé.
Continued arson attacks in Cameroon's English-speaking northwest have prompted calls for the creation of a self-defense militia. Parents argued in Bamenda after their children's school, the Baptist Comprehensive High School, was set ablaze August 13th. Some said it is no longer safe for their children. The burnings have continued. Residents say schools are being targeted for failing to respect the call to strike until all Anglophone activists are released from detention. Messages circulating on social media this month have called for businesses to close 3 out of every 5 working days. Wilfred Ndong is a government official in charge of basic education for the Northwest.
The forces of law cannot be in every school. Therefore, parents, we have advised them to form vigilante groups in the school so that they can help to secure the places for us. And in places where they can afford, let them light up the places. Some of these things happen because of the dark nature of the environment's concern.
Markets and government buildings have also been targeted this year in the Northwest and Southwest. No one has claimed responsibility. The government has condemned the vandalism and blamed it on militant separatist groups. Cameroon government spokesperson Issa Chiruma told VOA police discovered a cache of weapons and a bomb-making factory in the northwestern town of Bengui earlier this month. He said 7 people were arrested, including a Cameroonian-born Belgian national who had smuggled his way into the country through Nigeria.
He admitted being a member of the Ambazonia and the main leader of the armed wing of the Liberation Movement of Southern Cameroon.
Ambazonia is the name proposed by separatist activists for the nation they would create. At least 60 people arrested in connection with the strike have been answering charges of attempting to destabilize the country and cause revolt before a military court in the capital. A black and white video released online in early August of 12 strike detainees in what appears to be a dark underground prison has further raised tensions. The government has declined to comment on the video, but the footage has been shared widely on social media in Cameroon. In it, the speakers compare their conditions of detention to concentration camps, but say they will gladly die if need be for the cause of independence for the two Anglophone regions. The statement shows the separatist agenda has eclipsed the original strikers' demands calls for reform by Anglophone teachers and lawyers to address what they said was the overbearing use of the French in the nation's education and legal systems. Cameroon is officially a bilingual country, with Anglophones about 20% of the country's 23 million inhabitants. Violent strike-related unrest in December, coupled with emerging separatist rhetoric, prompted a government crackdown. Strike leaders then broke off dialogue with the government to resolve the crisis until all those arrested are released. A former lawmaker from the Northwest region, Paulinus Jua, says dialogue is needed.
If government were doing a lot, things would have subsided. But you see, this thing is instead, especially in Anglophone Cameroon, getting more radicalized. Something can be done. Dialogue. Genuine dialogue. Comprehensive, genuine dialogue. That's what we've been complaining about in this country for so long.
President Paul Biya has announced some reforms in response to the strike, like a new common law section of the Supreme Court, but has said he will engage in no dialogue that threatens national unity. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Chad has ordered Qatar's embassy in N'Djamena closed, accusing Qatar of trying to destabilize the country. AFP reports the embassy staff has been given 10 days to leave the country. Chad, Mauritania, and Senegal all withdrew their ambassadors from Qatar in June. They accused the Doha government of supporting extremist groups.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehis Wuhib, 18 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. In their first election in decades, Angolans cast ballots today to elect a new president. There's more concern today about the health of Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. And dozens of schools in Cameroon's two English-speaking regions burn as tensions in those areas grow. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
At least eight people are reported dead and dozens injured in Guinea after heavy rains caused a giant pile of rubbish to collapse and sweep over three nearby homes. AFP reports the landslide of trash happened on the outskirts of Conakry in Hamdalay after a week of heavy rains. Officials say many people remained buried as rescue workers continue to dig.
In Sierra Leone, aid workers are offering psychological support to survivors of last week's mudslide in Freetown. More than 500 people were killed, including more than 100 children. The death toll is expected to rise since hundreds of people remain missing. Reuters quotes UNICEF official James Gray as saying, "A lot of children who survived have been through a very traumatic experience and are receiving psychosocial support. Heavy rains caused part of Mount Sugarloaf to give away on August 14th in the middle of the night. At least 3,000 people are homeless. Most of the deaths and damage occurred in Freetown's Regent neighborhood."
Meanwhile, in the DRC, the death toll from last week's landslide that struck a fishing village is expected to rise above 200. Reuters reports the estimate is based on the number of homes that were buried. Heavy rains triggered the landslide that swept over the village of Tora in Ituri province in northeastern DRC. The acting governor of the province believes mostly adults were killed because it was a fisherman's camp. He says most of the victims' children were in a nearby village when the tragedy occurred. As many as 200 migrants were involved in five mass brawls near the northern French port city of Calais this week. French authorities say the violence occurred between Afghans, Ethiopians, and Eritreans who used sticks and iron bars against each other. 21 migrants and six riot police were injured. The violence is part of escalating tension in France and other European countries as migrants and refugees fear their welcome mat is slowly being pulled from under them. Reporter Catherine Field is following this story as well as other migrant developments and provides us with updates.
It's been 2 days this week where we've had very large clashes between sometimes several hundred migrants. Most of them seem to have been armed with clubs or batons, Afghans against Ethiopians and Eritreans. And it generally seems to always have come about when it's been areas around the distribution of food. This has been a big problem in the Calais region, that since they closed down the so-called Calais jungle in October 2016, there's been no one place, no regular place for these migrants to go for food or even just for showers or to get water. So you've got a lot of tensions there that as one sort of soup kitchen or food distribution point opens up, people will crowd it because they don't know if it'll be there tomorrow or if it will even be able to stay there to distribute the food. So there's a lot of tension there. Police have arrested five people who they believe are the ringleaders. But certainly it's just another indication of how there is this dreadful feeling among the migrants who are there that literally they're stuck there and the welcome mat really isn't out for them in Europe anymore.
So at this point then, what do you think will be the next step for them?
It's very difficult for them because on the one hand, you've got the European Union who's trying to get all the countries across Europe to take in some migrants. They've done a sort of a round-robin letter to all the countries saying, look, tell us how many you can take and we will compensate you for each migrant you take. But not all European countries are prepared to take in migrants, particularly some of the Eastern European countries are very opposed to this. Here in France, there are tens of thousands of migrants sort of floating around. Some of them are being housed in schools and gymnasiums and university complexes, and their paperwork is chugging through. But the problem's going to come when the first week of September, when everyone goes back to school. Universities will reopen after the summer break. Primary schools, high schools will reopen. And they've all said they want their properties back. So the French government, within the next week, 10 days, they've got to find new places to house tens of thousands of migrants or, within that period of time, process their application for asylum.
Does this include the 7,000 migrants that were at the camp and that were removed?
Indeed, this has been the big problem. Those 7,000 that were moved in October 2016, they're complaining that their paperwork isn't going through. We're getting the same complaint from the more than 10,000 that have been moved out of the northern Paris suburb of La Chapelle, where they've been gathering over the last year. That's how many have been taken in to some sort of shelter. But they keep saying, look, our paperwork isn't being processed. So they're coming back to Paris and saying, well, we might as well with our friends or just sort of colleagues or even people traffickers to find out, is there some way of either getting to Germany or to getting to the United Kingdom?
I understand that you recently visited a soup kitchen. What was it like? What were the migrants saying there?
There's a real edge to them there now because they just don't know how much longer people are still going to be giving out food. They don't know how much longer before police will just round them up and put them somewhere. No one knows where they will go. Some have already gone back to Afghanistan and are coming back to Europe because they say it's just not safe. Things aren't going well for them and they've got to find a place to get their head down before the whole situation, the whole attitude to migrants needing help in Europe, whether it be to get help with a new life here or to help get them resettled back home. And as the French president, Emmanuel Macron has said, send them back home, but also send them back home with some sort of job possibility, job training, something back home for them.
That was reporter Catherine Field speaking to us from Paris.
In South Africa, a controversial online auction got underway today to sell rhino horns. AFP reports the horns will be sold over the next 3 days, a move that conservationists say will only encourage poaching. The horns come from the world's largest rhino farm north of Johannesburg, where 1,500 of the animals live. Owner John Hume wants to sell 264 horns weighing 500 kilograms of the more than 6 tons of rhino horns he has stockpiled. He says he removes the horns after tranquilizing the animals, saying it is humane and keeps poachers away. The Humane Society is calling on the South African government not to issue permits to potential horn buyers.
U.S. President Donald Trump blamed the media for much of the controversy surrounding his presidency in a speech to supporters in Phoenix, Arizona last night. Michael Sullivan reports that the president also reaffirmed his political agenda.
After visiting U.S. Marines and Customs and Border Protection agents in the border town of Yuma, Trump was in campaign mode in Phoenix.
This evening, join together with friends, we reaffirm our shared customs, traditions, and values.
Trump has been widely criticized for saying many sides were to blame for the hatred and violence after a white supremacist in Charlottesville, Virginia, rammed his car into a crowd of counter-protesters on August 12th. The man killed a woman and injured 19 other people. Trump accused the media of selective reporting.
Just like they don't want to report that I spoke out forcefully against hatred, bigotry, and violence, and strongly condemned the neo-Nazis, the white supremacists, and the KKK.
His comments after Charlottesville sparked protests in other U.S. cities, and protesters were on the streets in Phoenix Tuesday night.
The man's got nothing done. All he wants to do is clip his political opponents and posture like a proud rooster.
Trump supporters were also on the streets.
I support the right to free speech. I support our president and everything he does. So I support our Constitution, and that's why I'm out here today.
Trump threatened a government shutdown if Congress doesn't fund a border wall and said his tough talk on North Korea is effective. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our African News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Misha Dubinsky, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss why ailing African leaders often travel abroad for their medical care. Should this be an acceptable practice? We'll delve into the issue on Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa.
VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.